the show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the Wealth Advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
Back for more. It is Bucket Strategy Investing, as you just figured out, because we just told you that. Johnny Dean and Professor Rick Plum here from Lucia Capital Group, talking about strategy, talking about retirement, talking about Social Security, talking about inflation. Pensions, thank you. Why did I say inflation? Because I was looking at the word inflation just as I just. This is what I do. This is what happened to you to get older. You know that?
Sidetracked easy?
I don't know. You ever been talking about something and you have something in front of you and you accidentally say that word even though it has nothing to do with what you were talking about? I don't know. Anyway,
if I do, about that, I don't even know it.
I have no idea either. Well, inflation, you know, that's one of the things that you have to be cognizant of when you're putting together your financial strategy. And one of the things I'm going to talk about here has to do with the 13 financial tips to live by, which was put together by Jonathan Clements for MarketWatch a couple of years ago. And I think we may have mentioned this when it came out. I don't recall. But whatever it is, we're going to do it again here because I think it's an interesting read and we can get some interesting reactions out of it. What do you do when you go online and you read financial advice? These are financial tips. This is by a guy, Jonathan Clements, who is a pretty
well-known.
Good writer. I mean, well-known. I don't know. I don't know that he's ever been an advisor. I don't know how many of these financial people have ever been advisors themselves. Maybe some of them have and they just didn't like it or whatever. But to me, I think the best way you can learn about this stuff is to actually do it. The real world. You know, there are people who put together these tests and you've taken them. There are CFP tests, there are series this test, series that test. And a lot of times the answers that are correct for the tests are not the correct answers when it comes down to the real world.
No, there's a difference between the academic, mm-hmm. you know, when you're going to school and learning about the economics of this, that, or the other thing.
Right.
And then the real-world application of it.
Yes.
It tends to change. Some of it has to do with the psychological investor side of it, where in a vacuum, economics works perfectly this way. And when you add in the outside variables of human emotion, things don't work the same way.
They don't work the same way, which is why we talk about strategy, because strategy and following a strategy tends to keep you in that, tends to make it more of a vacuum, as you just sort of described it. So anyway, 13 financial tips to live by. We're going to get to this in just a couple of seconds here. I don't know if we'll get to all 13. I think it's kind of fun to go through these, and we'll get Professor Plum's reaction, my reaction for what that's worth, and you can maybe follow along, and I hope learn something from it. That's the whole point of doing all this. 877-PLANNER, maybe you have questions, not on any of these things that we're going to be talking about, or whatever's on your mind, whatever is eating at you right now. Maybe you've got some decisions to make about retirement. Maybe you've got some decisions to make about Social Security or pensions. We talked about those last hour. In fact, I have a leftover question for that.
Okay.
But I'll get to that in a second. 877-PLANNER, PLANNER, our number here online, 877-752-6637. Emails, you can email us at our website, wealthed.com. We will get to some of those as well this hour. Lots to talk about, but we'll get to at least one or two emails. Go to our website, wealthed.com. And the off-air number, this is where you can talk to Professor Plum. This is very important that you understand that your individual situation is what's the driving force behind all the recommendations that they make off the air. All of them. It's your goals. Your goals are completely different from the last person that was in and from the person who is, you know, right after you. Understand that and understand that this is why we tailor our financial plans around your specific goals, not just generic advice. 800-644-1150, the off-air number at Lucia Capital Group, 800-644-1150. You can talk to a star like Professor Rick Plum.
Yeah.
Well, every once in a while, you know, people will recognize you, you know.
Not just on the street, no.
Well, no, but where were we? Or was I even there?
Which time?
Well,
I mean,
no,
that's happened.
This goes way, way back. When we first went.
The airport?
National, at the airport. I think it was in Seattle.
Seattle Airport, yes.
Seattle Airport. That's right.
When we used to check in by, before online check-in, we'd throw our driver's licenses up. We were traveling in a pack.
And you had to answer the questions. Did anybody else pack your bags? Blah, blah, blah. Yes.
And they saw one of the ladies that was traveling with us at the time was one of our screeners. And
yes.
We had a specific, you know, nickname for her. And I was like, oh, so-and-so. And they throw the nickname out. And then they see mine and they say, oh, Plum. Oh, Professor Plum. And, you know, yeah, that's
yes.
what they call it. Oh, my.
Oh, are you Professor Plum?
Wow, I listen every day that I can.
Yeah, that was very cool.
That was fun.
It was
kind of neat.
It was kind of neat because we'd just been a local show. Well, we'd done local San Francisco, California, San Diego. But
This was early on. This was like 2001.
Early 2001, absolutely. All right, anyway.
A few days ago.
Don't know what that means.
Had nothing to do with anything.
It doesn't, but anyway, he's a star. 800-644-1150. All right, so before I get to these financial tips to live by, we were talking in the previous hour about pensions, and do you take the lump sum? Do you take the monthly payments? And there are different reasons to do one or the other. And if you want to know more about that, you can give us a call or listen to our previous hour online. But a question that I had gotten during one of the breaks or whatever was on the taxation. And if you take a monthly benefit, that's income to you.
It's taxable income.
So that's taxable income. And the question was, well, wait a minute. We talked about a $1.2 million lump sum pension that you were working with this real life example that you gave last hour. And the question was, well, wait a minute. If they take this 1.2 lump sum amount, doesn't that, like, aren't you going to get taxed through the nose? I mean,
if you do it wrong, yeah, you could.
Yeah, the answer is that if you do it wrong. Professor, very quickly, let's just talk about this.
Most of the time when somebody's opting for the lump sum payout, they're having that lump sum transferred directly to an IRA. No withholding, no taxable event, goes straight to a traditional IRA. Now it's in a traditional IRA. And when the money comes out of the traditional IRA, it's taxable upon withdrawal. So that's similar. If we're trying to compare apples to apples, if we're getting a check for $5,600 a month from the pension, it's 100% taxable. If we're getting a check for $5,600 a month from our IRA, it's 100% taxable. So we're trying to keep the taxability the same there. But if you were to, you know, fill out the paperwork wrong and say, send me the check for $1,000,002, they're going to send you a check for, what, $960,000.
20% less.
They're going to withhold 20% for potential federal income taxes. And at that level, that ain't potential. That's real. You're actually going to owe more than that. But if you wanted to avoid the tax on the $1,000,002, you'd have to come up with $1,000,002 within 60 days and roll it into an IRA.
If you did
it the wrong way.
Right. Now, we also had the question of, well, how can it be put into an IRA?
Well, it's easy. You just tell the pension to send it to the IRA.
Because where's the money right now?
It's in a pension trust.
So you can go from...
So it's in a retirement plan, a qualified retirement plan.
That's what I'm getting at. It is in a qualified retirement plan. I think a lot of people don't know that it can just be rolled tax-free right into a trust. Right into an IRA.
Now, if I opt for the monthly payments, those, especially if I'm opting for a life-only payment, those cannot be put into an IRA.
And that's why the question came up, because if I'm getting $3,000 a month or something like that out of a pension and I'm retired, well, that obviously can't go into an IRA. How is it that a whole lump sum can go into an IRA? And that's why the question came up.
Well, we've had people say, well, I want to take the, and some people will, they don't have a lump sum option, but they may have a 5-year payout or even a 10-year payout. And so the 5-year payout can be annually deposited, transferred directly to the IRA. A 10-year payment can't. For whatever reason, the IRS has set the limit on if it's a lifetime payment, cannot be transferred to an IRA if you're receiving the payments. Mm-hmm. If it's a payment for less than 10 years, you can transfer that as an ongoing transfer to an IRA. But with a lump sum, it's just a one-time payment and so it's a rollover. Just like if I had $1,000,002 in my 401k, moving it to an IRA. If I have $1,000,002 in my pension trust,
move it to an IRA.
Same idea. They're both qualified retirement plans.
So they would give you, on a 5-year, on a $1.2 million, using our example, they would put $240,000 per year into an IRA.
Right. They'd either send you a check for $240,000 or, you know, because some places don't offer lump sums.
Yeah.
But they'll offer short payouts. Why? Because they said so.
And they set a limit of 10 years.
For whatever reason.
Maybe they look at 10
Unless
years
it's life contingent. Maybe your life isn't expected to last for 10 years, but you take a life payment, and you know you're only going to make 6 years. That still can't go in because it's a lifetime payment.
Isn't that odd? Well, sure.
It's law.
It's a law. But it is odd. All right. So that's how that works. The point here being that if you just make sure when you fill out the paperwork that you fill it out correctly, that says send this to roll this over to an IRA if you take the lump sum.
And that's why some other people will take lump sums. They say, well, I don't need the $5,600 a month. I only need maybe I don't need $6,500. I only need like $3,000. And so the lump sum, I would say, makes more sense then. But also, they can use that lump sum to do Roth conversions, because you can convert existing IRA into Roth. You can't convert payments from a pension into a Roth unless you're still working and otherwise qualify for a Roth contribution.
That's right. That's it. And you can do that anytime. You can,
any age, as long as it's not an RMD.
Right. Any income level. All right. Another good reason. So have an advisor take a look at this before you do it. You don't want to do it wrong. 877-PLANNER, PLANNER. 877-752-6637. Coming back with more Bucket Strategy Investing.
Listen on the go. Download the Biz Talk Radio app. Available in iOS, Android, and BlackBerry. Biz Talk Radio.
On Bucket Strategy Investing, we do more than just talk. This is the show powered by the financial planning strategist and investment team at Lucia Capital Group. You're listening to Bucket Strategy Investing.
It is Bucket Strategy Investing. For sure. We wouldn't lie to you about a thing like that. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, 877-PLANNER. If you have money questions, retirement questions, Social Security questions, insurance questions, 877-752-6637. Annuities, we cover it all. We cover it all. Strategy. We'll be talking tomorrow a little bit about a reverse dollar cost averaging, which I'll remind you here at the end of the hour. But not only that, but also how sequence of returns risk can hurt you even when you're in your accumulation years. Accumulation phase, that's of course when you're saving. Anytime between, I would suggest maybe your mid-20s, although I don't know how many people do save in their mid-20s, not enough, but all the way up through retirement, all the years that you're saving, not taking money out of your portfolio. Big important stuff tomorrow. Okay, 13 financial tips to live by. These always catch my eye because we offer advice on the radio and television. We offer advice to, you know, clients and all that. I believe our advice is astoundingly correct, as you might guess. But we can back it up. We can back it up with data, with evidence, and all that stuff. All right? So 13 financial tips to live by, an article in MarketWatch a few years ago from Jonathan Clements. And I found it again today. And I thought I'd go through these here with you, Professor Plum. And you could tell me whether or not you agree or not. Okay, Jonathan Clements, as I said, who wrote this, started it off by saying, okay, I'm in a bad mood, so here's today's deliberately inflammatory column.
Nice, so, to let us know he's in a bad mood.
In other words, you know, in a normal day, he may not offer such strong opinions. But he says, here are 13 of my firmly held financial beliefs. Number one, you have no clue where stocks and interest rates are headed, and neither does anybody else.
I think we've said that before.
Instead of forecasting returns, investors should devote their efforts to cutting investment costs, trimming taxes, and managing their portfolio's risk level.
I think we've said that before.
I think we have, too.
Good. Way to go, Mr.
So
Clemens.
That's not bad. Trimming taxes, again, I'd say managing taxes, which sometimes means trimming them. Overall, I would say it means cutting taxes across your lifetime. But there are ways to do that. Good one. So number one, yes, I agree with. Here's number two of the 13. Buying, and this is, and by the way, this number two is a point of contention among people who feel strongly both ways. Buying actively managed mutual funds is an act of faith in the face of daunting odds. S&P Dow Jones Indices, part of McGraw-Hill Financial, analyze the performance of U.S. stock funds in 13 categories. Depending on the category, just 14% to 39% of funds managed to beat their benchmark index over the 5 years through year-end 2013. He's talking about actively managed funds. Now, Professor Plum, you can make an argument either way.
Right, and there are times where active management does better than indexing, and there's times where indexing does better than active management. But on the other side, allocation is also important.
Absolutely.
Allocation across small, medium, large, value, growth, domestic, international, with all of those, emerging markets, sector funds, and things of that nature. And even if you're trying to use indexing as the underlying fund choice, you know, there, You've got somebody managing the allocation. Either you're managing it, how much do you put into each of those different areas? So there's some level of management going on, whether you're using an index or not. Now, there are a lot of people that say that if you can take the index and use fundamental and maybe even some amount of technical analysis to whittle away some of the ones that don't do very well,
yeah,
you can enhance your return. The question is, can you enhance your return enough to offset the fee for the management?
Well, and you have to consider that, too. Always, you should always consider fees and all that, expenses. Now, between, there's a 5 years through year-end 2013. That's 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. Well, we saw, for the most part, during those 5 years, tremendous amount of growth. S&P, Dow, they were all up.
Right. Well, we also saw some downturns, 2011 and other things.
Brief downturns.
Where investors who managed their own funds tended to do things at the wrong time for the wrong reason. The fund itself, it was a true buy and hold, that's one thing. But on the other side, investors don't typically maintain buy and hold. When somebody who's looking that deep into something, they're managing their own portfolios, and they unfortunately, invariably, make the wrong moves at the wrong time. They got out in 2011 because of the credit crisis, S&P downgrade, and they didn't get back in time. So they missed out on some return there. And it didn't matter at that point whether it was active or passive management on the underlying investment. They weren't in it. They got out. And so, unfortunately, data can suggest a lot of different things.
Oh, sure. What was it? Lies, damn lies, and statistics? Was that what Mark Twain said about...
I remember.
Anyway, yes.
I wasn't there. You were there when he said it.
I was very young.
Yes.
I was very, very young. I don't even know if I was... I might have been in school at that point. All right, but anyway... this goes in the category of what I think he was trying to say is avoid actively managed funds whenever you can. Almost saying never buy actively managed funds. I would disagree with that.
I'd say you could use both.
You can use both. There you go. All right. That's number two. The third of financial tips to live by, it's a huge mistake to compensate a financial advisor through commissions. Yes, it can be cheaper than paying a percentage of assets, but paying commissions means the advisor's recommendations will always be suspect because he or she has an incentive to get you to trade more and buy higher commission products. Now, this
if you're talking about buying stocks on commission, individual stocks on commission, that's a different game than buying, having somebody put a mutual fund maybe one time together and then, leave you alone because you don't want to talk to them after that. But, buying stocks where you're actively trading or somebody's buying and selling stocks on your behalf, that shouldn't be done on a commission basis. It should be done on a fee basis. But an overall financial plan, there are certain assets that in the past, although the fee push is huge right now, everything is moving towards registered investment advisors. The fee commission, the commissions are out, fees are in, that's where it's going. And so a lot of companies who were commission-oriented companies, annuities being one of them, have created registered investment advisor products where they can charge a fee. At first, they were horrible. They didn't make any sense. You could do better by doing a commission product than the fee product. Now the fee products are coming around where you have it coming around the other side. But when this article, especially when this article was written, if you wanted something other than stocks, there weren't any options. I mean, you're going to buy a CD. You buy those on fee, you buy a laddered CD ladder and you pay a fee every year. That doesn't work.
Doesn't that eat into your rate of return a little bit?
Quite a bit. Especially back when he wrote this article when interest rates were even lower than they are today.
2014 is when this came out.
So there were and there are times where a commission product makes sense. I mean, we've seen it happen too where somebody is managing their own portfolio. They don't want to pay a fee to a financial advisor, but they want a specific type of product, maybe a fixed index annuity. And so they look at the fixed index annuities, which have a guarantee of principal and an interest rate up to a cap that is paid based on an index. And they look at that compared to the same product on a fee chassis, and they say, well, it doesn't make sense to pay a fee when I can get almost the same thing by paying a commission, and I don't even see the commission. I'm going to keep it in there for 5 years. It has a surrender charge either way.
Right.
So there's times where commissions work in your favor. There's times where they do not.
That's where the idea, he says the recommendations will always be suspect, not true. Never buy never compensate a financial advisor through commissions? That's incorrect. All right, 877-PLANNER. We got two more of these. These are fun. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, more Bucket Strategy Investing coming up.
Listen on the go. Download the BizTalk Radio app. Available on iOS, Android, and BlackBerry. BizTalk Radio.
Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum. Bucket Strategy Investing. Here till the top of the hour. So if you have any questions or comments or concerns about whatever's going on in your financial life, your retirement, you're retiring, you're nearing retirement, not sure about a Social Security decision, whatever it is, give us a call, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. In the meantime, we're going over some of these financial tips to live by. Article by Jonathan Clements from a few years ago, 13 financial tips to live by, or something like that. I've given you three so far. We agreed with the first one that said you have no clue where interest rates and stocks are headed, and neither does anybody else. 100% true. Should you buy actively managed mutual funds? We found some cases where, yes, I think you should. Probably have a mixture of the two. Jonathan says it's a huge mistake to compensate a financial advisor through commissions. In some cases, yes. In some cases, no.
And a lot of it has to do with the person you're dealing with. There are very ethical people that are working on your behalf. That the product itself works better on a commission basis, in depending upon what product it is. And there's times where it doesn't work better. And so you need somebody who can show you the benefits and the disadvantages of each style of investing, of paying for advice. You got to pay for advice. He even said it can be cheaper to do commissions rather than pay a fee every year.
Uh-huh.
But you just have to find somebody who you trust and who's ethical and who showed you, here's the product on a registered investment advisor basis. Here's the product on a commission basis.
Well, here's the attitude on this. This brings me to a pet peeve. Advisors wouldn't be nearly so enthusiastic about variable annuities, he said equity, but fixed index annuities and cash value life insurance if the commissions weren't so high. I think that that's sweeping everybody under the rug, and I don't happen to agree with that.
I don't agree with it across the board, but I do believe there's enough there to make that a feeling across the board that is true in some respects.
Yep, you got to watch out for that. All right, here's one, and I think he's partly kidding. Well, he's not, but here's what he says. Number four financial tip to live by, insurance is a waste of money if you're lucky.
And how many of us are that lucky?
Well, life insurance.
How many of us will never experience a car being stolen, a car crash, a house,
burning down,
flood or something?
Yeah.
Or it won't need medical insurance. I mean, he's saying medical insurance is only for the unlucky. And I think medical insurance, well, first off, it's kind of a law now. Car insurance is a law.
Well, if you're lucky, you don't need any of that. That's somebody who's extremely lucky.
Yeah,
you go through your whole life and never need an insurance, you're extremely lucky. But why take a chance? He says, after all, if you collect on a policy, it means somebody has died, the house burned down, or some other disaster has struck.
You're right. And they, unfortunately, do strike.
What if you collect on a policy,
just
he says.
Like his first point was, you cannot tell where the market's going or anything. You cannot tell with certainty whether you will or will not need that insurance.
Of course not. No, there's no way to ever determine that. But he says if you collect on a policy that you could have afforded to pay the loss out of pocket, that's a sign that you're overinsured.
Most people can't afford to pay the loss out of pocket. That's why they have insurance.
I would hope that's why they bought insurance. He said he was in a bad mood when he wrote this article.
Doesn't mean that he has to make invalid points.
That's why we're reading it. Okay, so that was number four. Number five of the 13 financial tips to live by. You are highly unlikely to make any money from your home's price appreciation once you figure in inflation, homeowners insurance, maintenance, and property taxes.
Well, and that is true if we look at it in a bubble, but if we look at it in the context of we would have been paying rent and not getting any return on that, still, for many people, buying a house is a good investment because they're going to be putting out X amount of dollars a month for rent, or they're, in many cases, going to be putting out X plus amount of dollars for the home ownership. But there's something coming back at the end of the home ownership. So the only thing, instead, it's not just what did I pay for it and what I get out of it. It's what did I pay for it and what did I not have to pay somebody else.
You got to live somewhere. He says the loan may leverage any home price gains, which is usually true over the long term, but the interest costs will likely offset the benefits. I disagree with that.
Well, my son and I were talking about this the other day, interest rates going up potentially for home buyers. And so, and going back to...
Oh, and he doesn't
He's not in a house right now.
He does not own a home.
Yeah, they're saving up for their next house.
Yes.
They sold their first one, pocketed some nice change. Now they're trying to build on that. But we were talking about back in my day, 1980, 81, 82, when interest rates were 10, 11, 12%. He's like, how did anybody buy anything at that time?
Well, at the time, prices were, of course, lower.
Right, but also
but,
other...
But you also had, you also could stick a
CD.
CD, money in a CD and earn 10%, or I don't know what it was.
Maybe more. I can't
remember.
I remember a guy I know had an IRA CD for 10 years for 12%.
12%, 10 years. Can you imagine that?
Unfortunately, he didn't get it for 10 years because the financial institution, the savings and loan, did not last the 10 years.
Oh, I hope he was covered by FDIC.
Well, it was covered by FDIC.
But he didn't get
those interest rate.
No, it's
not. The principal was covered, not the interest rate.
Treasuries at the time. I remember seeing one for 12 point something percent. I don't know how long, but I remember seeing it. And thinking, even back then, in 1980 or whatever it was, I said, that's a lot of interest. 12%. Wow. All right. But I'm not sure I agree with that thing that he wrote on home price appreciation. I think it's still better to own a home.
For some people.
Paying down a mortgage, says Jonathan Clements on number 6 of the 13 financial tips to live by. Paying down a mortgage is a great low-risk investment. It may not give you the highest possible return, but the interest saved is probably greater than the yield you could earn by buying bonds, and the result can be substantial financial freedom. Everybody, he says, should strive to be mortgage-free by retirement.
I like the concept. I like the sentiment. And if possible, I don't have a problem with that as being a goal. And unfortunately, is not a reality for some people. And there are some people who can afford a mortgage in retirement. A gentleman I know retired with a pension of $10,000 a month. He'll also have Social Security. His spouse has a pension of a couple thousand a month. Their expenses, including their mortgage that they just redid and they're going to carry it for 30 years, are like $6,000 or $7,000 a month. They can afford the payment. And so they're leveraging it because of where they wanted to live or near the grandkids and things like that. They may downsize later in time, but who knows? But they can afford to have the mortgage.
They didn't have a lump sum to pay for a mortgage. I mean, to pay for a home. They had to borrow.
Yeah, the only lump sums that were available to them were money they put aside. And they're going to have a tax problem no matter what they do. Because not only did they work in a position, it was law enforcement, that had a nice pension, or safety, excuse me, not law enforcement. But they saved money in their 457 and other areas. And so they've got money set on the side, but it's all tax deferred.
What he's looking at here is what a lot of people look at, which is, well, goodness sakes, you have a $250,000 home on a 4% interest, even 4.5%. Have you seen over 30 years that $250,000 home is going to cost you $600,000 or whatever the number is?
And he compared it over that 30 years to using the same extra payment going into
a bond portfolio. Yeah.
If you've got a 30-year time horizon, you don't invest in a bond portfolio. You invest in a stock portfolio. And over a 30-year time horizon, or even a 20-year time horizon, it is very highly likely that you'll do significantly better in that bond portfolio than the interest rate that you're paying on the mortgage, assuming you're getting today's type of interest rates.
Well, of course. Now, again, this comes down to a writer who I don't think was ever an advisor. I could be wrong. Writer Jonathan Clements sitting at a desk and running some numbers and discussing this. But when you get into a debate with a financial advisor who has lived the real life, seen the real life scenarios.
Being mortgage free is definitely not the worst thing to be.
That is
great. I do not have a problem with it. It's just a matter of when are you going to be? And the problem with paying off your mortgage over maybe a 20-year period instead of a 30-year period is what happens in year 8 if you have an issue and you get laid off and you need some money. Something happens and you need money and you're in a position where you can't qualify for an equity line. You can't qualify for refinancing your mortgage and pulling some money out of it. Sure, you've paid down the mortgage. Hasn't changed your payment at all unless you're using a variable rate. And we're not too keen on variable rates for most people right now.
No.
So how do you have any flexibility in life if you've been putting all your spare change into the mortgage instead of maybe into a Roth or something where you could have access to it if an unfortunate event occurs?
We've talked about the Roth versus paying down the mortgage strategy many times on this show. And oftentimes, maybe more often than not, the Roth option works better than giving the bank the money to pay down the loan. Again, you're talking about the interest saved being greater than the yield. Well, this is why it helps to talk to somebody who's seen real-world advice. Because, as Professor Plum said, And as Jonathan probably never even thought about when he wrote this, if you have a 30-year mortgage and a 30-year investment time period, you're not going to put all that money in bonds. It just that's foolish.
A lot of times when we talk about paying off a mortgage or whatever, the first question is, first, where's the money that you have to pay off the mortgage? And how quickly can you pay off that mortgage? Because time horizon matters. And if you can have it paid off 3, 4, 5 years, then yeah, you're probably now you're comparing it to a short-term investment. If I were to take that extra money that I'm putting towards principal into a 3, 4, 5 year investment versus the interest I'm paying on my mortgage, sure, the mortgage is probably going to be a little bit higher. Over a 15, 20, 30 year period of time, because that's how much money I can afford to put against the mortgage, I think that you're better off investing, especially if you can do Roth IRAs.
Yep.
And time horizon matters.
And to reiterate, I don't think that financial writers necessarily consider things like that because they've never worked in the business. I don't know about Mr. Clements. Maybe he has. If he has, I would have expected him to know this. All right. We'll continue more of this tomorrow. I got some other stuff. We got some emails, trivia, and all that. But it's great stuff, fun stuff, financial tips to live by. 877-PLANNER, coming right back with more Bucket Strategy Investing.
Listen on the go. Download the Biz Talk Radio app. Available on iOS, Android, and BlackBerry. Biz Talk Radio.
The synergy between a structured strategy and integrated investments. You're listening to Bucket Strategy Investing.
That's right. Bucket Strategy. We've covered a lot of good ground today. And maybe not even half of what we had intended to. There just isn't enough time to get it all done between answering your phone calls and your emails and getting into the topics that are important to us as planners and important to us as wealth educators. So we will continue, as I said, this discussion or this article tomorrow, the 13 financial tips to live by Jonathan Clements. I think it brings up, while it was, I think the article was meant to be, you know, sort of lighthearted in some ways, but there's truth behind it in his view, in Jonathan's view. And we're going to tell you as planners and advisors that what you read on the internet, online, should be taken with some degree of skepticism. Not that it's untrue, maybe some degree of, maybe a critical eye.
That's well, anytime you're going into a situation where you're buying something, you don't buy the hype. You don't buy the marketing. You check it out.
Well, you check it out and you see what they're really saying, and you should question at least. Question. All right.
Trust but verify?
Yeah, in some ways.
I always love that line.
I was taught a long time ago, and I ignored it for a while, but I'm back into it now, to always question what you read. That's the more important thing. Question what you read. Don't say it's false, but question it.
Prove to yourself that's either true
right.
or false.
And there are people who go into things, read things, especially today, my goodness.
Or don't read things and just hear it word of mouth.
Well, that's even worse. But if to see it in print somewhere online gives it a little bit more legitimacy, who decide not to question it because it comports with their beliefs already, and that's comfortable. They don't want to change their beliefs. I've believed this for so long. It doesn't matter. Political, you know, religious, which we won't get into, but financial. I've always believed that annuities are bad.
Yeah.
I've always believed that,
and you knew
pick a topic.
Less than a quarter of what you knew about annuities.
Well, of course, you don't know. Yeah, there are people who don't know anything about it, but if they read something to the contrary, they don't question it.
And they automatically just say discount it.
It's discounted because it doesn't go along with what I believe. The better thing to do is to read something that you agree with
and question
and say,
it.
And say, where is this wrong? Not enough people do that.
Critical reasoning or something, what's it called?
I don't know. It's got a bunch of different names. But it's not until you read something that you 100% agree with to the point where you're pounding the desk saying, amen, brother or sister, that you say, wait a minute.
I don't know if I've ever read anything that I was that strong.
Well, I'm using this to make a point.
I know, but I've seen people that are that way.
As soon as I started doing that, I said, my goodness, was I wrong. And I think people need to do that. And so this is why I'm bringing this up. You know, things that this article that Jonathan was writing, and we'll continue more tomorrow, which says 13 financial tips to live by, I can see a lot of people looking at that who don't know, you know, maybe a lot about financial planning, certainly, or how advisors work, and look at it and say, I agree with all this. Look at this. Yeah, you're right. Why would I pay a commission to somebody? Why would I pay for actively managed funds?
Because you haven't got a clue what you're doing?
Why? Well, you mean that in the more the literal sense.
Yes.
Yes. But you're not just tossing that off as an insult to people.
No, I mean, why would I buy a house without using a broker? I could do it. I mean, I'm a smart enough guy. I could do the research and all the paperwork and the required documentation and the disclosures. There's no way in you know where that I would want to do that.
No way on God's green earth you're going to do that.
Or the other place.
Some people would say that's one and the same.
I don't know how you'd say it.
These days I would agree. All right, anyway, I don't mean to get off on that rant, but please, anytime you're reading something, especially if you agree with it, look into it and say, where is this wrong? I mean, 100% of my beliefs cannot be right. That's impossible. I think you're lucky if half of your beliefs are correct. But that's the only way to learn. Honestly, it's the only way to learn. It's what scientists do. Say, here's what I believe. Now prove me wrong. And if you prove me wrong, I will gladly change. All right, let's...
I don't know if scientists gladly change, but they...
Well, in the face of evidence, they will. A true scientist will do that.
Or they'll try to discount your evidence.
Nah, that's more the conspiratorial folks. No, an actual scientist... You know, they'll look and say, well, there's never been water on,
Mars
or something. You know, they see evidence.
What's all that wet stuff?
you can say, I was wrong. That's the hardest part of it, was I was wrong.
That's not
going
over easy.
But as soon as you start admitting you're wrong, I'm telling you, the worlds open up. Okay.
Your wife will talk to you again.
Well, I'm not giving advice on that regard. But think about it. If your whole life you've believed that annuities, that nobody should have an annuity, and I'm just picking this out as an example, that's what you've been told. It's been pounded into your head because that's what you read. And you read an article that says, here's why they're bad. If you just look at it and say, where is this? Maybe it's wrong in some regard. Maybe it's not 100% wrong, but let's not find out where it's wrong. And that's why you come to this program. Okay.
Feel better?
Not really. No, actually, I do. I believe I'm speaking the truth. Do you have a disagreement with that?
No, otherwise I would have said it.
I know, exactly. There's nothing where you can say always and never.
Haven't found it yet.
I haven't found it yet. Okay, tomorrow, reverse dollar cost averaging, why it can hurt you. This is another topic that we're going to get into. And another thing that a lot of people simply don't believe, and we'll tell you why I believe we're correct, reverse dollar cost averaging. Okay, let's get to the trivia for today. Individual income taxes, says the Tax Foundation, paid at the state level represent 23.5% of state and local tax collections. Individual income taxes paid at the federal level represent 47.9% of federal tax collections. Well,
that's because they don't do property tax or sales tax, thankfully, at the federal level.
Well, there are other taxes, too. You have road taxes, you have, they're all part of state taxes, but states they have to collect money to operate. Federal government does not. So they got to get creative,
And they collect a lot of other types of taxes.
Oh, believe me.
Income
tax is one-fifth, one-fourth, between one-fourth and one-fifth. And, yeah, it's a lot, especially if you live in a state like the one that we live in. But, sure, I mean, when you write that check, to register your car, that's going to the state, folks.
Yeah.
Gasoline taxes, their federal has that, too, but the state's is usually a lot higher. So we'll tell you tomorrow about maybe ways to manage those taxes, not so much at the state level, but certainly at the federal level. Well, states.
But in many cases, if we can manage the federal, we can manage the state.
Exactly. All right, we're out of time. You need the brain trust off the air. Let me give you the phone number, 800-644-1150. At Lucia Capital Group, 800-644-1150. Give them a call. For Professor Plum, I'm Johnny Dean. This is Bucket Strategy Investing.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. The information presented in this material was gathered from sources believed to be reliable. However, its accuracy cannot be guaranteed. No client or prospective client should assume that the information contained herein or any component thereof serves as the receipt of or a substitute for personalized advice from Lucia Capital Group, its investment advisor representatives, affiliates, or any other investment professional. Rick Plum is a registered representative of and offers securities through Lucia Securities, LLC.
a registered broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Lucia Capital Group, a registered investment advisor and an affiliate of Lucia Securities, LLC. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training. John Dean is an associated person of Lucia Securities, LLC.